Thank you for downloading the New Comedians bonus content. I'm the host, Alex Boardman, and throughout this series of bonus content, I'm going to be speaking to established comedians and trying to get some tips and tricks from them and learn what it was like when they were new. Okay, let's get on with the show. No comedians. What a day.
Hello and welcome to more New Comedians bonus content. I'm producer Rich, obviously, because trying to get Alex to do these things is fucking impossible. This week we've got Larry Dean for you. Now, me and Alex were recording a hostful episode and at the Comedy Store, and Larry was on with him. And Larry and I kind of started comedy around about the same sort of time. I think he was maybe a year or so ahead of me, a year or so behind me. And I mean, Larry's just taken off. He's absolutely brilliant comedian. You could tell when you were gigging with him that, you know, his voice was unique and his writing style was like really well established from the beginning. And I thought it'd be really interesting to get him on the podcast because he's someone whose career seems to be, you know, from an outsider's point of view, you know, moving up very quickly. He's becoming established. He's doing, you know, weekends at the Comedy Store, but from his point of view, it's a different sort of ball game. So we thought it'd be interesting for you to hear from someone who's not quite so new but still very green in the comedy industry. Hope you enjoy this one. See you afterwards. Here it is with Larry Dean.
Right, we're in between shows. It's the Manchester Comedy Store, and it's a bonus episode because I'm on tonight with Larry Dean. Hello, Larry.
Hello.
And you're doing fantastically well at the minute.
Thanks very much, man.
You're clearly on that. How old are you?
27.
Right, and you're on that trajectory that you see comedians go on that seems to be really fast of like, wow, this guy's just everywhere, and boom.
Oh man, they always compliment you at the beginning of a podcast. It's always makes you so uncomfortable. You're just like, is it going well? I don't think about it because I might cry. So good to know that.
It looks like that from the outside. Anyway.
Okay, cool, man. No worries.
I'd be really happy to know it's not going like that. To be honest,
definitely have my moments. So, like, because at the same time, I think no matter how well you're doing. You constantly are just looking at how other people are doing. And I don't post on Facebook and I don't post on Twitter. And then I see people like posting, oh, I'm doing this gig and there's like a swimming pool and all that kind of stuff. Life is amazing. Yeah. And I'm a bit like, oh, come on. I should have, like, I did that gig a few weeks ago and I didn't put it out. So nobody knows that I've done that gig.
Yes.
But then people say to me, oh, it's going really well for you, isn't it? And it's because I never post anything. And I think that's almost the better thing. It's like, like the reverse psychology of it is if you don't post anything, everyone just assumes that's like, oh, I've not seen. It's a bit of an odd thing to go to though in your mind of going, I've not seen anything of them. They must be doing Live at the Apollo or a lot of TV things.
Well, you're at the Comedy Store anyway, so that's as good as it gets on the circuit.
Yeah, man.
There's just a bit of a buzz around you, it feels like.
How long have you
been doing it anyway?
Six, seven years.
You actually did the Gong Show here.
I was going back in time and getting you all emotional.
It was that. Do you know what? It's just, I don't know what it is actually. it's my inhaler.
All right.
You make me sound like a fanny.
You're making fun of a sick man.
Yeah, you evil. Let's ruin this career before it really gets to. I'm going to put it on Twitter. And
I like what you called it a career, mate. I'm taking that as a quote from my poster.
Career. I know. I never used that word. So, you did the Gong Show here, which loads of our listeners have done.
Aye.
About 6-7 years ago,
yeah.
You were saying, and it didn't go particularly well.
No, I'd done it once before. Mick Ferry was comparing,
yeah,
and then all the Scottish acts had been booed off in the first section.
Whoa.
And I was supposed to be on at the end of the first section, and I think that wasn't too far after. I think Manchester still hadn't forgiven Rangers for what they did.
Oh God, yes.
Cup. So there was a kind of let's hate the Scottish people, and Mick Ferry like obviously knew that we'd all travelled down specifically to do this gig. So at the break, I went up to him and I went, oh, I'm Larry Dean. Am I still on the list? Because you forgot to say my name before the end. And he went, oh, sorry, I'm going to put you on first in the next section. And he said, are you Scottish? And I went, aye. And he goes, I'm going to do 10 minutes on why we should be nice to Scottish people because we get World Cups and they've got nothing to look forward to.
Okay.
And then because he slagged off Scotland for 10 minutes.
I can't wait to ask you, are you Scottish?
Yeah, well,
all right, I'm Larry Dean.
Yeah,
are
yeah.
you Scottish? Maybe, mate.
Yeah, no, I've just got a throat infection, man. And then, so he did like 10 minutes before, and then he said, welcome to the stage, Larry Dean. And then they're all a bit like, okay, we'll let the Scottish guy off.
Oh,
the second time I did it.
Oh, no. I know what's coming.
The compere, God almighty, couldn't even control it.
Oh, that was a show with 42 acts.
Yeah.
That night, 42.
I was on near the beginning, man. I'm glad I got to just get back on the road.
That's one of the worst, like, but it's one of the biggest shows I've ever done. 42 acts, come on.
Yeah, yeah. I think, like, how long is it? It's supposed to last 2 hours.
It was about an hour and three quarters of the first half to do 20 odd acts. They've capped it since then.
What's the cap now?
25 or something, I think.
All right, soon. That's all right. And also, like, it's also in the. It's horrible as well because. You probably think, well, there's going to be people here who have travelled for hours.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
Get to
oh,
this
it's
gig.
Awful. I hate
but you have to say to the audience, you have to go, we have to be harsh here, because otherwise it's going to go on for ages.
Well, that night, someone had come from Cornwall. It was Harriet Dyer.
All right.
You'd come, presumably, from Scotland. I don't know if you were somewhere the night before. There were two or three from London. But it was like every time someone had come on and you'd gong them off, and part of me was going, we've got to get through 42. And then the next bit, you're going, but this one's come from, like, Swansea, and I did it the week before. It's a 5.5 hour drive.
And I always find, especially when I was doing gong shows, that, like, you'd see, like, an act walk up with a ukulele, and you'd go, all right, well, there's no point in me even getting on stage now. They've won it.
So they're rubbish, aren't they, gong shows? They're pretty rubbish for that exact reason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good to do them just because if you... You have to get... It's definitely where luck comes into it as well. You have to be good to win it. Or to get into the final, but you also, or you have to have
just
Mick Ferry compere.
Yeah.
I know that you're Scottish.
I grease them up for you before.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm comparing it next week. I'm going to, anybody Scottish, I'm going to so go for him.
Oh, mate, don't do that.
Why,
just do it when I'm on next. When my career goes on the downturn, just wait for me to do it, then you get your payback again.
So, whatever we think about gong show, was that your first experience of gigging? Because a lot of comics are having to do gongs because that's kind of all there is now.
Yeah, I'd assume that probably would be the only way of getting in front of an actual audience as well. No, my first gig was, I moved down to Southampton when I was 18.
Right, okay.
And then I did like a comedy degree thing.
Oh, at the university?
Not Southampton University, but Southampton Solent University.
Right,
so it's like it was like the second worst uni in the country, and that's like what my two Ds and a C got me in my
Was it free when you did it, or did you have to pay?
I have to pay.
Oof.
But the thing is, that's the joy of being a comic. Like, it's either you never make enough money to actually have to pay your student loan back, or you make enough that your student loan doesn't even come into it. Like,
it's the perfect job, actually.
Yeah, exactly. So judging by the amount of money, the fact I've not even had to pay tax for the past 7 years, sorry, student loans, not going to be happening.
So was your first gig part of the Solent Uni?
Yeah, and
like
that was
course,
in...
was like a showcase?
It was a kind of... in-house kind of showcase.
Yeah.
So I never count that as my first actual gig. That's the first time I went on stage to do kind of stand-up. And so that was in 2008. And the only time I actually started really actually gigging when it wasn't just my mates in the audience. First normal audience was in Bournemouth when I was 20. And it was just like an open mic night. And it was all right.
It's the regular one. Because they are better, aren't they, than a gong. For your very first
occasion. Yeah,
yeah.
But also, you want to, I think, stick to the student places because students will go if there's free booze. Not free booze, but free tickets and then cheap booze.
Yeah.
And then you actually, especially for the same age as a student, because that's the kind of people you want your humour to be.
Yeah,
it's
not
worse
than
if you're an old person.
No, exactly.
Like, you're a young person and then only used to doing old crowds. Which is why I had a lot of issues when, like, because you move up that one level and then you get to compere for £30 and it's always in the middle of nowhere in an old man's pub.
Yes.
So you go from doing dick jokes to students to like British Legion gigs and you're just like, oh, so the Tories, they are good, bad? You know, that kind of look at the audience.
Yeah,
going,
yeah, where are we? What,
yeah. How does David Cameron come out of this gig? Come on, tell us.
It's really strange that you should say that, because I was talking to somebody else only recently. I did a student gig this year for the first time in like 8-9 years. Because you get to a point where you... Because I did my first gigs like you when I was 20, and they were all 20. And they were brilliant. There was like Avalon used to have this comedy network that was amazing. You'd do every uni. And you wouldn't always do well, but at least you got... Everybody was your age, so you just got for a drink with them after. And then there was a point where I was like, probably about what you are now, about 25, 26, 27. You said you were 27.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, I'm getting too old. And I'd had a kid by then anyway. So I've got some stuff about that. And they're going, mate, we're 19. We don't care. We've no idea what you're talking about. And then, so I didn't do them for years. And then suddenly I went back, and it's now like I'm their dad. So it kind of has come back round again.
Yeah, at the same time, that's why I'm a bit like, when I do student gigs, I don't really have anything about myself that makes me not, like, because just my face is the only thing that
you
gives away.
You look really young anyway. You could be anywhere from, like...
No, that's because I'm all sweaty, because I've just come off stage. It's just going to make me shine. But the, like, the material-wise, like, talking about being gay and that, it's just like, oh, if anything, we're making more of them these days.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, there's more likely to be students and the gay people in a university than in any other gig, really.
Yeah, yeah. And also, they're, like, deliberately tolerant.
Yeah. It's almost cringy tolerant, though, because sometimes you'll bring up a subject. Like, I'll say, like, the word bender, and they go, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they never said that in The Guardian, so I don't think we can laugh at that, I'm afraid.
But maybe they can, because you kind of can own that word. We respect you.
Yeah. It's when I had a journalist once say to me, is it like when black people try to regain the N-word? And I went... and this was an interview for a journal for a paper, and I went, right, if you're going to put that in the paper, I did not say the one who said that in the question. And she was like, I'm going to put it in. Like, this interview, I've never had to do that. You know, you always want to be important enough to go, this interview's over. You know what I mean?
So when you did that first gig in Bournemouth, the first proper one, did you know everything you were going to say? Were you one of those people?
Yes, because I've never had the confidence to really just go on and wing it. Like, I can do it when I'm comparing, but not like, even now I find that if I'm go too far off script, unless the audience is so nice, you know, like, I always think you get 4 or 5 gigs a year out of about 300 where you're actually confident, enjoying yourself, and then the other, like, 295, sorry, I'm reading what I'm saying right now. No, the other 295 are just you acting like you did. Basically, you're doing a performance of you acting you did the time that you had the best gig.
I know exactly what you mean. It's like the character. It's like, I remember days like that at school where you're just naturally funny at school sometimes in a lesson. You're like, I'm flying here, I'm killing this. Everything I say is just really funny.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen as much as you'd think when you become a full-time comic.
Oh, no, man. And it's like, I always now find that loads of comics, the first time they do a bit of new material, that'll be the best that goes for them. And the reason why it doesn't go as well the second time is not because you've lost the buzz, it's because you've now got a panic because you think that joke worked great. So you put expectation on it. Yeah. And as soon as it doesn't get as good a reaction as the first time, you just think, oh, it's always like, in retrospect, in the past, I was so funny. But as soon as you do it again the second time, then it's just like the expectation's there. And you're like, oh, it's not as good as I thought it was. And then every single time, you don't remember how good it was the first time. You remember how bad it was the second time.
Yeah, it's funny. Do you remember anyone giving you any, like, advice? Well, obviously, you did it at uni. So who gave you that advice at uni?
Oh, it was a guy called Chris Ritchie. It wasn't like a...
Was he an ex-stand-up, or was he just like a...
Like an ex-open spot. So it wasn't like... the best advice I got was Matt Price. Cornish comic, lives in London, and it was mainly because I was constantly gigging. First of all, it was Ed Axel said you've got to gig at least 4 or 5 times a week, and you got to go anywhere to do the gigs. So I did that by doing the cut. Like, I would drive comics to gigs. Sometimes I'd drive comics to gigs which I wasn't even on, but there would be a comedian on that I would want to watch, and they'd be in the car with me, so I'd be able to get the advice off them. And Matt Price was one of them, and he said that if you're doing stand-up in the first 3 years, nobody really gives a damn what you do. So that's the time that you should be experimenting the most.
Yeah.
Because if you do, like, a new bit in the store, you've got to be sure that it gets a laugh.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if you don't...
You're out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's so much more difficult to get a 20 again at a club after being dropped from 20s rather than be doing 10s at a club then being dropped from 10s. As soon as the amount of time goes up, the more difficult it is to get back in.
That is so, so true.
So that's the one thing I almost regret. I didn't do enough of that, of messing around with stuff at the beginning.
In a similar way, I was listening to a Louis Anderson. You know Louis Anderson, the American comedian? Yeah. And he must be about 60-odd now, but he was amazing when I was a little kid. And he's always been really, really good. It's just really funny. And he's in a new sitcom now called Baskets. He's brilliant in that. And he said somebody told him, who was it told him? I can't remember. Somebody told him early on, you should do 100 gigs before you make any judgment as to whether you want to do it or not. And he said it's kind of like a trick in the way that if you want to do it, you'll do 100 gigs and you'll go past it and you'll know on about 5 or 10.
Aye.
He said, and most people who are a bit unsure will do 3 or 4 gigs and kind of go, oh, I'm never going to get to 100, I'll just quit. And he said, don't aim for 100 and I'll be good. He said, just aim to say, I won't make a decision on whether I'm a comedian or not or want to be until I've done 100.
Yeah.
Because you'll know on about 20.
Yeah, I always find it weird the longer somebody's going and then they give up. I'm like, I can't believe you fucking giving up.
I mean, I
quite like it though at the same time because I'm like, oh, cool, there's another gig for me. It's such a cynical thought. Me like,
really like it when people give up. So, what would your advice now, 7 years in, be to anybody that's brand new?
Don't. There's enough. There's too many comics on the circuit as it is. My advice would be definitely take that advice from Matt Price. Also, when you chat to professional comedians, listen to what they've got to say. Obviously, on stage, because you learn a lot by sticking around at the end to watch the headliner. And don't be bitter being like, oh, I can't believe the headliner got more laughs than me. It's only because they've all had an extra drink.
Yeah,
and it's actually can be just as difficult to do that spot. But then they listen to who the comedians are that you have to listen out for being the harshest on your acts, and then ask them their honest feedback. Because I remember I got told by Matt Price, he went, ask, what's his name? West Country comedian Nick.
Not Nick Dudies.
Oh, he's amazing as well. I can't believe his name's just gone blank in the surname.
Page?
No, Nick Page, yeah, the guy who used to do Escape to the Country.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant comic, right? And he said to me, ask Nick Page for feedback. And I thought, oh, cool, maybe Nick Page is good at giving advice. But it's because Nick Page is the most blunt with an act. Yeah, he'll just say if he thinks you're bad or he thinks you're good. And I think you actually need to get used to hearing that shit from people.
Yeah, I think so.
You can be like, oh, they're completely wrong, but definitely take on advice. If you've been hearing from enough people the exact same thing of, like, that joke's shit, it's probably because it's actually shit. But most people now are just like, no, it's my art. It's the art kind of thing. And you learn nothing by just constantly thinking, oh, it's an art form. It's like, no, it's just not, the audience isn't going for it, and that's the ones you need to impress. You're not trying to impress yourself. Because a lot of the stuff is like, so many narcissists get into this.
Yeah,
and they waste their time because the narcissists never get far because they're too busy loving themselves on stage rather than actually listening to what people are saying to them.
Are you listening to this, producer Rich? Not me, Larry was talking. He's looking at you as he was saying it. Look, he's staring at you now, mate.
Hey, man,
staring
at you. Take a hint, all right? I think I had a bad one. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a bad one as well. Mate, you're in the office. You can literally book yourself right now. Just go on to the computer.
The password on that computer is don't book Richard Massara. Right, that, because you've got to go for a little walk now because we're in between shows and stuff, and that was so brilliant.
Oh, thanks,
you
man.
Are absolutely the perfect
is
person.
It's like a callback to the first minute of
you're
when
you're doing this because you're like the newest bonus comedian we've had because you've lived all this that people are still. When a lot of the people did it 20 odd years ago, the circuit's changed so differently.
Yeah, I know. I always think that I must be getting bitched about, like, by comics, because I even found that sometimes like I'm getting the thing now as well of being like a bitter comic.
Really?
Like, yeah, and it's weird because I'm just like, imagine what I'm going to be like in 30, 40 years' time. Because you know those comics that are like been going 40 years and are bitter about everything.
Yeah.
It's like the reason why
you
haven't been doing well is because you've been doing the same material for these 40
years.
Yes,
exactly. And you've not moved on. And you don't actually even enjoy it or love it or anything. There's like, there was an old, because I used to play loads of basketball and stuff. And no, it's like a really positive vibe that, you know, like football's a bit sneaky and a bit like, I'm better than him and I don't like them and I'll try and spoil this. And comedy, I always thought was a bit like that. But at the real top end, the ones who are, they're like, they used to say in basketball, game, if you've got a game, you recognise game. If you're good, you know somebody's good.
Aye.
And I think it's the same with comedians. I think really good comedians see another good comedian. They're like, oh, you're awesome. I really enjoy your stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then if you're not confident enough in yourself, you're like, oh, well, why is he getting that? I know he's only because he's this or because he's like that. And
well, like, I always think like with the, that's another bit of advice I always give myself, that basically whoever you admire, watch what they do in a year and how much material they go through in a year and try and keep up with that. So, like, say if you watch, like, someone who does Mock the Week, 8 out of 10 Cats, and all that, and
Delaney's
the
most prolific.
Yeah, yeah, and you've watched them. So, say if I wanted to be the next Gary Delaney, I'd watch him in every single show he does and see what jokes he uses, because we can keep track of what jokes are going well, and then go, right, I need to get the exact same amount of time off of jokes, because if you want to do all those shows yourself, that's how much pressure they'd be putting on you then anyway.
And it's tons of work. It's tons of work, and not many people can be bothered
doing
it, even if they are good enough. But well, this was brilliant. This was absolutely brilliant.
Thanks for having
me.
Thank
you. See you in a bit, dude.
Cheers, man.
Yeah, you see? Good stuff, wasn't it? Yeah, well, you guys know what to do, don't you, nukes? You need to get on the fucking website and you need to rate and review this fucking podcast. Because if all of you did it, we'd have, like, three more reviews than we do at the minute, and I know one of those is from Alex's son's account, so I mean it does genuinely help, and we do put out all this stuff for free, so you know, don't be a cunt. Alright, well, hopefully see you soon with a new episode. Bye.
Thank you for downloading the New Comedians podcast. I've been Alex Boardman. You can follow me on Twitter at AlexBoardman. Big thanks to The Comedy Store for hosting us on the third Sunday of every month. Don't forget to rate and review us on iTunes. The producer was Richard Massara. No comedians.
Bye.
Bye.